In the late 2000s, Liz Bohannon quit her first corporate job and bought a one-way flight to Uganda. She had a degree in journalism, but no real plan other than to build relationships and community. All through college, she had been passionate about issues facing women and young girls living in extreme poverty and post-conflict zones. While traveling the country and making new friends, she learned that often, young women, once they finish high school, are unable to afford a college education, which would help them escape the gravitational pull of generational poverty. A crystal-clear mission came into focus: develop a sustainable marketplace solution that would employ young women so they could bridge the financial gap and go to college. After a couple of failed attempts, including a chicken farm that went belly up, Liz designed a pair of sandals. She then cobbled together a rudimentary supply chain and manufacturing operation that made a promise to three Ugandan women: make these sandals for the next 9 months, the time in between when high school ends and when college begins in Uganda, and if you do, you'll go to college in the fall. They said yes. And Seiko Designs was born, providing educational and economic opportunities for women in East Africa, all while producing a brand of beautifully designed and sustainably conscious products, from jewelry to clothes to shoes to handbags. And Liz's story is remarkable. And on one hand, I want to say that she's special, but believe it or not, that wouldn't be doing Liz any favors.
I have seen firsthand in myself and then with how this narrative of like, you are so special, you're smarter than you think you are, and you're, you know, stronger than you know, is actually affecting people. And here's what I've seen. They believe the narrative. They're like, okay, I'm special. I'm like a little bit above average, and I'm smart, and I'm kind of inherently good at everything that I try, and I've got this like inherent, you know, talent. And when people believe that, I don't believe it actually empowers them. It actually creates a sense of fear and anxiety. People that believe that they are above average and believe that they're special, that have been told, man, you're just so good at everything that you try, they actually start to act out of fear and anxiety, because they're like, okay, I'm seen as special. I'm seen as above average. I'm seen as talented and smart. I don't want to do anything that is going to cause me to lose that identity or cause anybody to question this inherent identity that I have. Yeah. So they start only saying yes to stuff that they know they'll succeed at, that they'll excel in. They start playing it really safe. And ultimately, that's the demise of being a creative, of being an innovator, of being a leader, is that you start playing it safe and becoming a lot more concerned with protecting your ego and your image than you do about what you're creating out in the world.
If you're a creative pro, chances are somewhere along the way, someone told you that you were special. You were talented. Maybe they called you a leader or an innovator or a high performer. I'm sure they were well-intentioned, but here's the thing. They didn't do you a favor. They unknowingly planted seeds of fear and anxiety, two forces that we feel sprouting up around us at every turn. Today, anxiety is at an all-time high across the board. And for those of us who already have a head start in the anxiety race, it's time we talked about how to put it in its place before it sidelines us altogether. This is Daily Creative, a podcast for creative pros who want to be brave, focused, and brilliant every day. My name is Todd Henry. Welcome to the show.
In January of 2020, I got a call Sunday morning. Kobe Bryant's helicopter had crashed 10 miles from my house. I go racing to the scene, and we're reporting live, and the first live special event for the network on ABC, and they made a catastrophic reporting error. I failed to separate what was reportable from what wasn't reportable, and I made a really bad mistake.
That's Matt Gutman, ABC News' chief national correspondent and author of No Time to Panic: How I Curbed My Anxiety and Conquered a Lifetime of Panic Attacks, in which he chronicles his 3.5-year effort to escape panic's grip. He attributes the on-air mistake he made to a panic attack he was having at the moment of the report. Matt was no stranger to panic attacks. He's battled them for much of his life, and with few exceptions, he was able to push through and do his job well. Unfortunately, this was one of the few exceptions. In his initial report, he had inaccurately stated some things about the Bryant helicopter crash that weren't true.
And I may have hurt people, I don't know, but I felt very pained by it, and I was suspended, pilloried publicly, ridiculed online, people calling for me to be fired or even physical harm to happen to me. And I basically decided with my wife that I had to leave the television news business or figure out why I feel so broken inside. And then the next 3 years, I didn't expect it to last 3 years or to take so long, but it took a while to sort of A, figure it out, and then figure out these new modalities to help myself get better.
I've heard so many leaders in a similar situation, people who are very confident, very competent, extremely gifted at what they do, very talented. And yet when they step into these moments, they feel something similar to what you described, almost like a like an out-of-body type of impending doom. It's interesting to me because it does seem to happen. In my experience, I hear those stories from the last person you would think would be experiencing this.
You know, I think you really hit the nail on the head. I call it the paradox of the courageous coward, right? I'm a guy who goes out and for his living experiences some of the most dangerous things that people can do, like war in Gaza and, you know, swimming with sharks and jumping out of a helicopter into shark-infested water. Like, that is my job, is to do dangerous stuff and to present live on TV.
Okay, hang on. War? Jumping out of helicopters? Swimming with sharks? I'd be more surprised if he wasn't having panic attacks on air. But the Kobe Bryant incident was just one in a long line of attacks going all the way back to his college days when he was delivering a presentation to his peers and professors.
There was nothing riding on it. It was not graded. It was not even mandatory. And I'd spent a year writing this 200-page paper. I hear my name and I get up and suddenly I'm like... And it felt like a trap door had opened up in the earth and I'd fallen into it. And my body felt like I was molting into a werewolf. And like I'd worn a sweater turtleneck because I thought it was academic. And it felt like a pack of feral cats were clawing at my neck. I didn't know what happened. It was this physical, I don't know, this experience that I'd never anticipated was even possible. And which is why I say that a panic attack is basically anxiety's version of an orgasm. If an orgasm is the maximal manifestation of pleasure, then a panic attack is the maximal experience of anxiety. And so that's the first time I had a full-on sweating through your underpants panic attack.
Thankfully, Matt's made a lot of progress since then. Much of it he attributes to the work he did and documented in his book.
I went into this crazy year-long jag of evolutionary psychology and biology because I needed to know why I was broken. And if I was broken, why does this even panic? Why does it even persist in the human genome? And what I learned is that panic is normal. Humans, apes, primates are wired to be anxious. It was an evolutionary adaptation. By being scared sooner, we were able to survive better. And then an evolutionary psychiatrist named Randy Nessie told me, he's like, your body would prefer having 1,000 false alarms, which is a panic attack, so long as it doesn't miss a real alarm. Because you miss a real one and you're dead. And so just normalizing that, contextualizing it, destigmatizing panic was a huge salve for me.
Normalizing is a word that gets thrown around a lot these days. Often the sentiment is, let's talk openly about this thing that isn't normal. And in doing so, we create the perception that it's more normal than it actually is. But when it comes to anxiety, this isn't the case. Anxiety is biologically normal. We've just assumed for so long that it's a malfunction. Gutman realized that's not the case. But that doesn't mean we should just let it run rampant. He learned techniques and tactics for keeping anxiety from overtaking him.
People always ask me, like, what do you do in the moment? You feel a panic attack coming, and many of us do because you feel that anxiety building. I like to tell people now that they should set up an intervention before it's necessary. Have a couple of modalities that work for you. And there is no one thing. It's not meditation, and it's not mindfulness, and it's not psychedelics, and it's not cognitive behavioral therapy. It's all of them. All of them work. It's going out and taking a 5-minute walk, because you know what? That releases serotonin. And if you walk far enough, it can release a dopamine and all these wonderful hormones that we have endogenously in our body that are meant to make us feel better. I do like a mindfulness technique that I think really works well, because I can also do it in public and nobody knows you're doing it. I look around me and I see 5 things that I notice in my field of vision. I'm in my office at work. I notice a picture of my son's sweet eyes. I see outside this almost chartreuse color of new buds on the trees. I notice this blue Prius outside, the olive tree downstairs. My 15 magical years with Disney trophy right here. my Saddam thing behind me, whatever it is. Five things that you notice with your eyes. Four things that you hear. Three things that you feel, the shirt on your back, the shoes on your feet, slight wind in wherever you are. Two things that you smell, one thing that you taste. So by focusing on the five senses and doing that checklist, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, it basically helps disrupt the panic that is building. And that disruption, that's what we're here to do. Like, we don't have to have a panic attack.
To learn more about Gutman's journey and the strategies he uses to keep anxiety at bay, check out his book, No Time to Panic, available wherever books are sold. And to hear our full interview, visit the Daily Creative app at dailycreative.app. But for now, don't go anywhere, because things like normalizing and mindfulness are great defensive strategies for managing our anxiety. But what about going on the offense? After the break, we talk with Scott Mautz about building mental strength. Stick around. Hi, everyone. This is Todd Henry. My new book, The Brave Habit, is available now wherever books are sold, in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. I think it's my favorite book I've ever written, and a lot of people are telling me it's their favorite book as well. I think you're going to like it. So check it out wherever books are sold, or at thebravehabit.com. Now, on with the show.
Right now, one of your potential customers is trying to decide between you and the competition. Now, the other guys are crystal clear about what they do and how they're different. You? Not so much. Who do you think's gonna win? Hi, I'm Josh Gott. I write and produce this show with Todd. But when I'm not telling stories here, I'm helping companies like yours craft a brand story that makes sense. If you're tired of being overlooked because people still don't understand what your company does, why it matters, or how you're different, let's talk. Go to gotclarity.com to simplify your message and spark new growth. That's gotclarity.com. Now, back to the show.
I have interviewed or surveyed or in some way, shape, or form connected with more than 3,000 executives to ask one question. Thinking of the highest achieving organizations that you were ever a part of that overcame the most obstacles, thinking of that time in your life, what are the attributes of the key leader at that time?
Scott Mautz is a former Procter & Gamble executive and the author of numerous books on managing and motivating teams. His newest release, The Mentally Strong Leader, is all about building the habits that help us regulate emotions, thoughts, and behaviors. It's a key ingredient to taking new ground in the war against anxiety, though that wasn't exactly his primary goal at first. His research started with simply wanting to know what makes great leaders great. And after asking over 3,000 executives, he discovered that
an astonishing 91% of executives described the same type of person, the same breakdown, if you will, which is leaders that exuded mental strength, but in six ways in particular. They were exhibiting the core mental muscles of mental strength, which, as I detail in The Mentally Strong Leader, are fortitude, confidence, boldness, decision-making, goal focus, and messaging. Your ability as a leader to stay positive in the messaging to the troops. And so we found that these leaders were exhibiting these core mental muscles. And it makes sense because they're also the muscles that require self-regulation. It's really hard to be confident all the time. You have to let all the noise not filter in. You have to self-regulate that. It's really hard to be resilient all the time. You have to let negativity not filter in. You have to self-regulate that, and so on. So we found that this connection between these core mental muscles and leaders that use them and flex them, it was just incredibly correlated with achievers who achieve.
As it turns out, the same characteristics that make you a great leader of others are the very things that make you a great leader of yourself. Fortitude, confidence, boldness, decision-making, goal focus, and messaging. But wait a second. Are they the things that make you a great leader, or are they the marks of a great leader? Mautz makes the argument for the latter.
And I'll give the very quickest overview of each tag. When you think mental strength, that's one of the first things people think of is, wow, you know, okay, that's got to be fortitude. And by the way, people often say, well, is mental strength the same thing as mental toughness? That's a term you may have heard of, mental toughness. And it's not. Mental toughness is one slice of the broader umbrella called mental strength. And we most often think mental toughness, that's the fortitude element of this. And I think we all know what fortitude and resilience is and why mental strength would be important. Confidence is a big part of it. Because think about the opposite for a second when you're not feeling confident, when you're not regulating your emotions and your thoughts. And I think we all have that inner dragon that drags us down with a negative self-talk and chatter. And if you don't regulate that, your confidence dwindles. Boldness. It takes regulations of thoughts and behaviors and things that limit you from wanting to take risks in life. If you don't have that self-regulation habit, you're not going to be bold enough in life. Very similar with both goal focus and decision making. If you're not strict with the frameworks and the systems that you can put in place to create the habits to be decisive, to stay focused, you're really going to struggle with your mental strength. And even on the messaging front, that six core mental muscle, when we're talking about what it takes as a leader to show up with positive messaging and positive intent versus wanting to just tear people's faces off sometimes when they get you angry, that takes a lot of self-regulation.
Self-regulation, that's the key. It's at the heart of what Matt Gutman learned to do over the course of his 3-year journey, and it's the underlying principle in Scott Maltz's mental strength model. Anxiety is a problem, but not because it's inherently bad. In fact, there are actually benefits to anxiety. Anxiety becomes a problem only when it breaks free from the leash and starts running wild in the proverbial neighborhood of our thoughts and emotions. We have to continually regulate it, otherwise it becomes a menace. The good news is, the better we get at regulation, the more our six mental muscles grow, which makes it easier for us to regulate. It's an upward spiral where we're not only better at keeping anxiety in its cage, but we're agile enough to quickly chase it down and wrangle it back into submission on occasions where it sneaks out. The bad news is, the hardest part about any upward spiral is getting started. And if that's where you are today, Maltz offers one tool to create early momentum.
It happens to all of us, right? We're in that moment and negative emotions start taking over. And I've been working and validating a process for years that I call the redirect rhythm. That is very simple. In that moment where you can feel your emotions rising, right? And remember, mental strength is about regulating your emotions. By the way, I don't mean not having them. That old statement, check your emotions at the door, does not work for anybody ever. You just have to have the systems and the frameworks in place to manage those emotions. So I use what I call the redirect rhythm. And it's 4 simple steps that can happen at lightning speed, Todd, once you train yourself. In the moment you're feeling that negative emotion, first, you have to create space. This is that old fashioned, you have to take a breath, because what you're doing here is you're creating distance from the intensity of the emotion, and you're breaking the gravitational pull that emotion is dragging you into a place where you don't want to be. So of course it's common sense. You hear it all the time, take a breath. But why? Why do you have to take a breath? Because you have to break that gravitational pull for the next step, which is to just pause and name the emotion that you're feeling. Right now, I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling angry at my coworker because they're not listening and I know I'm right and I don't feel heard right now. So you've named what it is that you feel, and now it starts to lose its hold over you because it's this thing. It's not this general gestalt of fear or confusion or just emotion running wild. You know what it is. It's anger. So you move to the next step, which is reassess and redirect. Reassess. What's really happening here? What's happening is that my emotions are running away with me. Okay, so redirect. What am I going to do about it? How am I going to respond, not react? When we react, it tends to be emotive. When we respond, we tend to take action. This is an example of one of the habits you can build from the mentally strong leader, that when you create space, when you name the emotion, when you reassess and redirect, you can effectively create a system or a framework to help productively self-regulate your emotions.
Simple tools like the redirect rhythm can give us what we need to actively train ourselves. And just like with any sort of training regimen, it helps to get a sense of where you stand. That's why Scott developed an assessment in the book, 50 questions, and in the end, you get a mental strength score, muscle by muscle, so that you know where you stand on each of the 6 and focus your training accordingly.
Just like you go to the gym, you don't go into the gym and say, today I'm going to work on every muscle in my body. It's going to take me 12 hours. You go in and you say, today's leg day. Tomorrow is back day. The next day is chest day, whatever.
As creative pros, we can't underestimate our natural tendency toward anxiety and just how destructive a force it can be in our lives and on our work. Learning to control it and regulate our response helps ensure that we never get sidelined for good, even if we get knocked down from time to time, which happens to us all. And in those moments, there's something even more valuable than tactics to move us forward.
I think a lot of times creative people fall in love with the product that they're creating and lose sight of the people they're creating it for.
That's Erwin McManus, author, speaker, futurist, filmmaker, and designer.
I love creating, and I could spend my life like a mad scientist, always designing something new. And, you know, whether I'm designing, you know, a new line of clothes or writing a book or working on some film project, or I'm always working on something, but I have to always go back and ground myself. Are people my highest value? The first time I was in a room, I think like with 150, they all had companies of minimally 100 million. And most of them were under 40 years old. It was insane. And I remember I got up on stage and I said, I'm not going to teach you how to make more money. All of you are better than me at that. I am going to teach you how not to die alone. And I think that art is more difficult than people think. And so I know, you know, we could talk about the creative process, and I have a whole process on how to have epiphanies and, you know, how to have these explosions of creativity and imagination. And I love teaching on that. And I love talking about those things. But I just always want to ground people on, you know, it's a human experience. And, you know, and even in my meeting this morning, I met one of the most creative artists in the world. His global influence is maybe unsurpassed right now. And the whole conversation was about how to not lose himself. And other creatives may be different, but I'm going to say this. I think when you create only for yourself, you're still immature. But when you create for others in terms of their praise, you're profoundly fragile. But when you create things that are honest to who you are for the good of others, I think that's when you find like your sweet spot. And, you know, whether you're a designer or, you know, whether you're a filmmaker or a storyteller or a writer, you know, a speaker, whatever it may be, if you step on the stage because of what the audience can give you, I think you haven't found the maturity that your soul is really longing for. But when you stand on the stage for what you can give to others, it changes everything. To me, when you paint on the canvas and you're sharing what's inside of you because you know that when you're true to you, you touch the world, that's when it really makes a difference. I write things that are always true to me, that are speaking to me, but I'm also writing because there's somebody I love that I feel like they need this sentence, and this sentence might set them free. I think that when you begin to live your life being fueled, informed by love, there's a magic that happens, and you begin to create. I think you create outside of yourself. You create beyond your own talent, your own capacity. And you know, that word genius comes from the same etymology as the word genie, because the ancient Greeks believed that no one was a genius, that genius was given to you by the gods. And when I was a very young boy in that psychiatric chair, and then this psychiatrist, they give you all these tests because they think that you're mentally challenged, because I'm a straight D student. And for the first time in my life, someone tells me that there's genius inside of me. But it felt so trapped inside of me, I didn't know how to find it. And I don't think I would ever have found any level of genius if I hadn't have found the love that one set me free, but found an ability to love in such a way that you want your life to be a gift to the world. And I think the magic of creativity is most profoundly unleashed through love.
We all grew up hearing it's better to give than to receive. And never is that more true than on the days when we feel anxiety creeping in. In those moments, instead of searching for what you can get to calm your fears, look for a place to give. The creative gifts and talents that we hold so dear and are so dear to our identities are called gifts because they're meant for us to give away in the service of others. Anxiety is one of those things that can't be removed. It has to be displaced. Even if you could expel it from your system entirely, it would create a vacuum that must be refilled. So when we redirect our creative energies in service of others, we invite love in, and it pushes out, it displaces the anxiety that we feel. Love is a powerful motive, a creative force, and my hope is that it fuels every ounce of brilliant work you're putting out into the world. We'll all be better for it, and so will you. If you'd like to hear the full interviews with any of today's guests, or one of the thousands of industry leaders and authors and experts I've interviewed since 2005, you can listen anytime in the Daily Creative app at dailycreative.app. There you'll also find daily episodes, prompts, guides, and more to help you be brave, focused, and brilliant every day. Daily Creative is produced by Joshua Gott. He's also our chief story architect. My name is Todd Henry. Thanks so much for listening.